Once in the distant past, the Buddha-to-be whom we call the Bodhisatta came into being in the womb of a deer, Sarabhamiga Yoniyam. He was born and he grew up to be a magnificent stag, a sambar, the tallest, the largest of the many kinds of deer that roam the foothills of the Himalayas. He had a gray, shaggy coat and antlers towering over his head. He lived deep in the forest, roaming alone, feeding on wild fruit, grasses, and leaves, and listening with his long, funnel-shaped ears to the sounds of the forest world. Sounds that were low and soft and near at hand, like the drone and buzz of the carpenter bee. Sounds that were loud and sharp and far away, like the staccato hammering of the woodpecker. Now, not too far away, in the capital, was the king, King Brahmadatta. The king was fond of the hunt. One might say he had a passion for hunting. He believed himself to be a mighty man indeed. In fact, the only man worthy of the name. One day he called to his courtiers, the men of his court. He said, "I have heard rumor, I have heard tell of a great sambar, not far away, deep in the forest. I must get that sambar. I must bring back his towering antlers and his shaggy gray coat. Let us go, and let me remind you that whichever one of you lets the deer go by, that one will be punished." Well, the men whispered to each other. They said, "Whatever we do, we must find a way to drive the deer to the place where the king is standing so that it may fall by his arrow, or so that he may be the one to miss it." Well, they mounted their horses and they set off. And it wasn't long till they came to the borders of the forest where, exchanging glances and making signs, two of them went ahead, scouting and looking for signs of the deer. And sure enough, at the edge of a clearing, they found a deer trail. Nodding to each other, they motioned the others to come, and they formed a great circle, encircling the thicket. And they beckoned the king and placed him at the edge of the clearing by the trail. And then the men took out their clubs. They beat the ground, scaring up the game, and the first to leap up was Sarabhamiga, the Bodhisatta. He ran three times around the thicket. There were men on either side, standing shoulder to shoulder with bows at the ready. And then, where the king was standing, he saw an opening. He ran straight towards the king, his eyes on fire, as if throwing sand in the king's face. Well, the king raised his bow and let fly the first arrow, but he missed. Now, deer are clever. If the arrows come from in front, they dodge this way and that. If they come from behind, they speed up and hasten away. Sometimes they even fall to the ground, pretending they are hit. Well, the king fitted a second arrow to the bow, and again he let it fly. This time, Sarabhamiga fell to the ground, and the king let out a roar. "Sarabhome vido! I got him! I struck him!" But when he came forward to see where the deer had been struck, Sarabhamiga leapt up and made his escape, right along the trail, going deep into the forest. Well, the men began to snicker and laugh and say to each other, "Oh, I thought the king said he got him, he struck him. Perhaps he meant he struck the earth." The king heard them snickering and laughing. His pride was wounded. He said to himself, I will show them what measure of man I am. Dropping his bow, with his hunting knife in hand, he began to pursue the stag deep into the forest. Now, Sarabamiga had this fine sense of hearing, and he was tracking the king even as the king was tracking him. He could hear the sound of the king's footfall on the dry twigs and leaves. Parasaram sonanto, parasaram sonanto, parasaram sonanto. He could tell at what distance the king was behind him. He could even tell when the king turned a corner or rounded a familiar bend in the forest. The king went blindly forward, fueled by his rage, fueled by his wounded pride. Now, not only did Sarabamiga have a fine sense of hearing, his sense of smell was also very strong, very sharp. And as he went along, bounding along the trail, deeper than he had ever been in his own forest, he smelt water somewhere ahead of him. He knew at once it wasn't a pond open to the sky, nor was it a stream running fresh and clear. It was stagnant water. And in his mind's eye, he could see what had happened somewhere ahead of him on the trail. Some great tree had fallen in a storm and then rotted away, leaving an immense hole in the ground. And over the years, that hole had become a pit, now filled to many feet with stagnant water, and the opening covered over with fallen branches, with fallen tree limbs, and invisible to the eye. Sarabamiga leapt from the trail and took another path deep into the forest, still listening to the sound of the king's footfall behind him. Parasaram sonanto, parasaram sonanto. But then at once he stopped, for the sound of the king's footfall came no more. Sure enough, the king, as he went along, blinded by his rage, made no use of all his senses, but fell headfirst into that pit of stagnant water. He tried to clamber out, but the sides were loose and slippery. He floundered there, and the fear of death overcame him, and a sudden realization that it was all because of his pride, because of his anger, because of his sense of himself as a mighty man. What was he to do? Was he to die there and his bones rot away where no one would even find him? The thought of his wife and children came to mind, the thought of his courtiers, the thought of all the citizens of his kingdom, and all the good he might have done as a leader and a king. Well, Sarabamiga reflected. He said to himself, this king pursued me with one sole purpose in mind, to take my life. And yet, I cannot stand by and let him die there, in that pit. And he came back through the forest. He stood at the rim of the pit and he looked down and he addressed the king. In a human voice, he said, Ma Bahi, great king, do not be afraid. I will save you if I can. The king was astonished to see this magnificent creature staring down at him. He stood still and watched and wondered how the great stag might save him from this fate. But there was a stone, a great stone, lodged in the side of the pit. And carefully, ever so carefully, Sarabamiga took one step and then another, and leaning forward with his great branching antlers, he beckoned the king to take hold, and the king clambered up as far as he could and reached one hand and then the other, while the stag lifted his antlers, and at last the king was able to scramble up and stood dripping, with his heart beating at the top on the ground, safe and alive, and transformed. He fell to the knees before the great stag. He said, "Noble being, I ask of you to come and be my ruler, to come and rule the kingdom at my side." "Sarabamika," he said, "Your Majesty, we are four-footed creatures. We are not rulers. We are not kings, except of our own domain. But if you wish to honor me and show your gratitude for what I have done this day, then I ask you one simple request, and that is not just to honor this life, my life, but to honor all lives, and to give up this sport that has brought you so much pleasure, to give up hunting and put down your bow and put away your knife, and to ask your citizens to do so as well." The king was silent. He nodded, "Yes, yes, so it must be." And then the great stag knelt upon the ground and invited the king to take a seat upon his back. And he brought him out of the forest, and he set him down on the road to the capital, to Varanasi. And the king took the rest of the afternoon and walked slowly towards the city. And he was met there by the army who had begun to come in search of him. And to the drummer he gave one simple request. He said, "By beat of drum now, you must go through all the streets, up and down, high and low about the kingdom, and announce this edict. Henceforth, this kingdom will be a place of safety for all the birds that fly in the air, for all the fish that swim in the rivers and lakes, and for all those who go on 4 feet through the forest." And so the orders were given. The drummers went about the streets all over the kingdom. And so for a time, the people adjusted to these new rules. But then someone began to mutter. "The king, he said he was a mighty man. We have always known him to have a great passion for the hunt. Could it be that he simply wished to keep all the game for himself?" And people began to spread this suspicion and this rumor. And people said they had seen the king going out early in the morning on horseback. Where could he be going except to hunt as he was used to? Well, one of the maidservants in the queen's retinue reported to the queen these rumors and stories. And the queen nodded, "Yes, there is some part of this story that has not been told." She approached her husband. She knew that he was changed, but she did not know why. She coaxed him. She encouraged him to tell her exactly what had happened in the forest that day. And so he did. And she said, "And now you must tell that story so that all your subjects know the reason for your transformation, so that they too may honor the great Sambar." And so a great gathering was called, and the people came. They assembled, and the king told his story. And he spared no detail. He spoke of his pride, of his moment of humiliation. He spoke of his rage and his wish to show himself the mighty man he wished to appear, and he spoke of his tumbling into that great pit, and how he feared that that was the place where he would end his days. And he told them of the appearance of the great Sambar at the rim of the pit, and how the Sambar had reached down his antlers and rescued him. The people were moved. They were moved by that story. And then, following, in those days that followed, they did not complain. They happily obeyed the king's edict. And they too went out sometimes in the early morning through the paths of the forest, hoping to catch a sight of the great Sambar, Sarabamiga.